I got to give Victor a little bit of a hard time here. I get to watch this video multiple times throughout the day in our different services, and it just stood out to me. Who says chasing females? I was like, what is that? It was funny, as I listened to the story this morning, he was talking about simple service, and for those of you who don't know, we're constantly trying to figure out new ways to just really simply impact the people around us, whether it's, you know, just something that's going to bring a smile to their face, a breakfast bar on their way to work, you know, a water bottle on the way home, just something to be able to serve in any small way that we can. And I remember he was talking about how he was kind of nervous when he first got started. I remember when we first came to Hoboken and we were launching, and the church hadn't started yet, and I was beginning to build relationships with a lot of different people throughout the community. And I remember one day we were down there doing breakfast bars as people were going to work, and one of the guys that I had gotten to know came up, and I handed him the breakfast bar. I was like, hey, good morning, man. And he reached for his wallet, and he's like, so how much do I owe you? And I was like, dude, you really think I'm down here peddling breakfast bars at the PATH station? Like, I know you don't understand what a church planter is and what we do, right? But, like, I'm not selling breakfast bars to make it, okay? But if you haven't been a part of that team and served in that way, I highly encourage you to do it. It's a lot of fun, and it's cool to see in Victor's story how that was kind of a step for him and getting involved in impact, and then now he's beginning to take that to a whole another level with his group and this dinner group that's going to be so focused on impact. I think it's going to be really, really cool, the things that you're going to hear about his story as it continues to move forward. For those of you who are with us for the first time, let me just take a second to introduce myself. My name is Chris High. I'm the lead pastor here at Hoboken Grace, and you have walked into the middle of a conversation called What If? And for the past couple of weeks, we've been asking this question, what if? And we've been dreaming of how God could use us. It's really important for you to understand that we believe that the church, and for us as a church and a family and a community, that we've been called to be the body of Christ. In other words, we've been called to do what Christ would do if he were here. And when you look at Christ's life, you see someone who's impacting the people around him in a variety of ways. You see him impacting people physically. And so he's healing and he's feeding. He's impacting people physically. He's impacting people emotionally. He's speaking to their fears and their doubts and their concerns and their hopes. He's interacting with them and bringing emotional healing. He's also interacting with them spiritually and impacting them spiritually and constantly trying to help them understand, listen, what you believe about who God is, it's not who he really is. And let me reshape for you this kingdom and what it's about. It's about family. And he's constantly impacting people in these three ways, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. And so if we're going to be the body of Christ, we believe that that's what we have to do as well. That's what we've been called to do. And so we're looking at, we've been asking the question over the course of the past couple of weeks, okay, what if, and we've been dreaming of all sorts of different ways that we can impact people physically, emotionally, and spiritually. And talking about what it means to really dream with God, something that for many of us, we know what it's like to dream. We dream about our career. We dream about our personal lives. But what does it look like to really dream with God? And we've been exploring this beautiful story of this man named Nehemiah and looking at how he moves into the midst of this problem. But rather than just seeing it as a problem when he sees what's happening in Jerusalem, he sees it as an opportunity. And asking, okay, can we begin to see things this way? And then he begins this process of dreaming with God. And, oh, God, what's possible? And what if we could do this? And what if the king granted me access to this? And what if we had these supplies? And he's dreaming. But then his dream isn't just this big idea that dies, but that dream becomes a plan. And then that plan begins to become reality. And last week where we left off, we were looking at the beauty of how this thing is coming together and the wall is being rebuilt and this thing that was this huge dream of Nehemiah's is finally happening. And it's been really cool because as we've walked through his story, we've been doing the same in our own lives and really asking ourselves, okay, what are the problems that God's brought into your life? And then how do you begin to dream with him about how to interact with them And what if you really were born to not just recognize the problem, but to be part of the solution? And we've got all these dreams that are beginning to bubble up inside of our family. And it was really cool last week because two of them were featured in our Impact Fair. The community garden was featured in this location. And for those of you who weren't here last week, this is a community garden. It's not just about, okay, raising fruits and vegetables for yourselves, but raising up a community garden that would provide fruits and vegetables for the homeless shelters in our area so that they can have fresh fruit, fresh vegetables on a consistent basis. This really cool idea. Last week, they had 13 people who joined that team. And there's this group of people who are coming together to not just dream, but okay, now how do we put that into practice, our signing team, which is dreaming of how we can love and care for the hearing impaired inside of our community. The five people joined that team last week as this individual has been dreaming, but now it's beginning to become reality of how we can love and impact and serve people in all sorts of new ways. And it's been really cool to see all these different dreams, and they're at different places in this process, right? But it's exciting. And for some of you, you're experiencing that because you're dreaming and you're beginning to see things move forward, and it gets more and more exciting the closer that you get. You look at Nehemiah's story. He must have been unbelievably excited where we left off last week because the families are beginning to work on the wall. It's starting to happen. There's been so much time, so much effort, so much planning that's went into getting to this moment, and it's finally happening. It's amazing the feeling when that dream is finally becoming a reality. I've been joking around today about how this happened in my life this past summer because many of you have heard me mention the fact that this past summer I was able to build a fort in my backyard for my kids, and we had been dreaming about this for a long time, and to be able to bring something together where they could play and have a kind of a little house back there for them. But we didn't just want it to be like a house on the ground. We wanted it to be up, right? Like a tree house without a tree. And so we've been dreaming about this, and it was cool as we got to the middle of the summer because all of a sudden everything was coming together and we had the supplies, and then finally it was going to become a reality. And it's so exciting when you get to that point in the dream. And all this, we started building it. The walls started to go up. Everything was going great until, and this is a part of the story I haven't told yet, until my neighbor looked over the fence and said, "That's kind of tall." I said, "Yeah." She said, "Well, you can see into my yard." I said, "You're talking to me from your deck that looks into my yard." And then we began to have this conversation, this really awkward conversation of, "I don't really think the city will be okay with that. Well, how's the city going to find out about this?" And she began to make it very clear that the city was going to find out about this because she did not like how tall it was. And so I said, "Fine, I'll go talk to the city myself." Went down to the city, talked to the city, found out I needed a permit to walk into my backyard in Hoboken. Yeah, the groans, right? And so we went back and started going back and forth, and finally figured out like it was an acceptable height, which is really cool and actually really nice of her. I didn't feel that way about that at the time. And for those of you who are watching online from the city, I don't have a fort in my backyard. This is just purely hypothetical. But I remember walking in, and Anna's like, "What's wrong?" And I said, "I have to take the whole thing down. I have to start over from scratch. There's this part in the dream where you're dreaming and everything's beginning to become reality. But then there comes the battle." And obviously, that illustration is just kind of a funny situation. But one of the things that I've found as I've watched people dream with God and as I've done it myself is that if you're going to dream with God, there are going to be times that are really, really exciting. There's going to be times when it looks like everything's coming together. But one of the things that I've found is that along the way, there's almost always a battle. And one of the things that I'm nervous of as we begin to dream together is that there's this lie that's out there in our culture that I think that we have brought into what we believe about God, that if we don't talk through it, if we don't understand it, can destroy our ability to be able to live the dream that maybe God's given you. And I think can really misinform who we believe God is. Because in our culture, there's this lie that if it's the right thing, it will be the easy thing. Maybe you've even heard people tell you this. Well, you know, that can't be right because it just seems like it's too difficult. There's this idea that if you're encountering stress and conflict, then you must be doing something wrong. Because if you were doing it the right way, and if you were doing the right thing, then everything should fall in place. You shouldn't be stressed out. That's a bad thing. You must be making a wrong decision somewhere. You must have taken a wrong turn somewhere. This isn't the way it's supposed to work. And what's happened is that inside the church, we've kind of taken that and we've brought that into what we say about who God is and how God works. And so sometimes I'll have conversations with people and they'll say, well, you know what? I just feel like God's closing the door on that. Why? Because it's gotten really hard and really stressful and it's just kind of a battle and it doesn't seem like God's opening the door. And so I'm going to go this direction now. And one of my great fears is that we'll take this lie that our culture in a lot of ways has bought into and we'll bring it into our understanding of God. And in the process, rather than allowing Him to inform us of how He works, we will allow our culture to inform us of how He works. And we may miss out on what He actually has for us. And so what I want to do today is I want to go back to the story of Nehemiah. Because again, I think in this story, God is teaching us so much of what it means to dream with Him. And as we left off last week, everything is going great. The walls are going up. The families are working. It's amazing. It's all coming together. And really, up to this point in the story, there hasn't been very much that's gone wrong. Last week, we noted the fact that some people were laughing at Nehemiah and making fun of his plan, basically saying, who are you? How can you possibly think that you're going to make a difference when no one else possibly could? But now you think you're going to come in, a cupbearer. What's this plan you put together? This is never going to work. But there hasn't been anything that's gone seriously wrong. A king granted him permission. He was able to get there safely. He has the supplies that he needs. Everything seems to be coming together. And you come to the end of chapter 3 and you think, man, this is going to be easy. All the doors are open. And then you hit chapter 4. I believe if you're going to dream with God, there will always be a chapter 4. Let me take you there this morning. We're going to start off chapter 4, verse 1. It starts off kind of like what we saw in chapter 3. It says, Sanballat was very angry when he learned that we were rebuilding the wall. He flew into a rage and mocked the Jews. This is the same guy who was mocking Nehemiah's plan in chapter 3, saying in front of his friends and the Samaritan officers, what does this bunch of poor, feeble Jews think that they're doing? Do they think they can build the wall in a single day by just offering a few sacrifices? Do they actually think they can make something of stones from a rubbish heap and charred ones at that? He's saying, this is ridiculous. I can't believe you guys have this idea that you can really do this. And so he's mocking them, kind of like what he was mocking them in chapter 3. But then as the story continues, it begins to escalate. Jump down to verse 7. It says, but when Sanballat and Tobiah and the Arabs and the Ammonites and the Ashdodites heard that the work was going ahead and that the gaps in the wall of Jerusalem were being repaired, they were furious. Notice that the group has grown. It's no longer just three individuals, but now there are actual large groups of people who've gotten involved. It says, they all made plans to come and fight against Jerusalem and throw us into confusion, but we prayed to our God and guarded the city day and night to protect ourselves. Then the people of Judah began to complain. The workers are getting tired and there's so much rubble to be moved. We'll never be able to build the wall by ourselves. Meanwhile, our enemies were saying, before they know what's happening, we'll swoop down on them and kill them and end their work. The Jews who lived near the enemy came and told us again and again, they will come from all directions and attack us. So I placed armed guards behind the lowest parts of the wall in the exposed areas. I stationed people to stand guard by families, armed with swords, spears, and bows. Then as I looked over the situation, I called together my nobles and the rest of the people and said to them, don't be afraid of the enemy. Remember the Lord who is great and glorious. And fight for your brothers, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your homes. When our enemies heard that we knew of their plans and that God had frustrated them, we all returned to our work on the wall. But from then on, only half of my men worked, while the other half stood guard with spears, shields, bows, and coats of mail. The leaders stationed themselves behind the people of Judah who were building the wall. The laborers carried on their work with one hand supporting their load and one hand holding a weapon. You come to the end of chapter 3 and everything is coming together. Man, look at what's happening. This is incredible. But then you hit chapter 4. And the battle begins. And all of a sudden, it's not just people who are mocking Nehemiah, but now they're beginning to organize armies. Now they're beginning to plan the attack. And I want you for just a moment to put yourself in Nehemiah's shoes, because it can be really easy, because we know the end of the story, to think that he really shouldn't be afraid. But I want you to put yourself in the shoes of a leader who's come in and has convinced these people to rebuild the wall, and now their lives are at stake. And as a leader in that moment, it's not your life that you're worried about, it's the kid who's rebuilding the wall over here. Because you know, if they attack, they're not going to spare him. And you're the one who convinced him of this dream. You're the one who's responsible. You think Nehemiah was a little stressed? Do you think Nehemiah was losing a little sleep? Do you think Nehemiah slept at all? It's not just three individuals. Now he has nations who are saying, no, we're going to destroy you. We know you got this stupid dream, but we're going to destroy you. And it's not like they haven't already experienced that, because the nation of Israel had been destroyed over and over and over again by invading armies. And these people are hearing this, and it's not just the people who are outside who begin to attack Nehemiah, but all of a sudden then the people from within start to attack him as well. And all of a sudden the conflict is not just outside the walls, but there's a conflict that's beginning to develop within the walls, because people have been hearing this over and over and over again. It's a ridiculous plan. You're never going to be able to do this. And so I think Nehemiah very carefully includes in this passage that, listen, the battle wasn't just being fought with those who were looking to attack us. He says the battle is being fought inside as well, because I turned around and these people were complaining and these people were terrified and they're beginning to give up on this dream that we had of what God could do. They've been told over and over again, there's no way you're going to be able to do this on your own. And so finally they come to the point where they believe it, and they come to Nehemiah and say, there's no way we can do this on our own. And all of a sudden, it goes from celebration to chaos. All of a sudden, I mean, just a couple of verses earlier, everything is falling into place. Everything is working exactly the way it was supposed to. But now, it's a full-on battle. And I think it could have been really, really easy for Nehemiah in this moment and in this situation with everything that's happening and the fact that the people now from inside are like, we're not sure we want to do this. This isn't going to work out well for us. They are going to destroy us. They're going to come from every angle and they're going to destroy us. The very people he's trying to love and serve and the people he's trying to rebuild the wall for are beginning to turn on him. I think it could have been really, really easy for Nehemiah in that situation to look at what was happening and just simply say to himself, well, it looks like, I believe God brought us to this point, but it looks like God's closing the door. Maybe this isn't supposed to be this way. Maybe I misheard. I mean, do you really want me to put all these people in danger? I think it could have been really easy for him, and I wonder if maybe for many of us, had we been in that moment, had we been in that situation, if we wouldn't have looked at it and said, well, it must not be from God because this is going to be way too tough. But Nehemiah's idea of who God was had been shaped by his history. I think he's demonstrated that for us over and over and over again in the first four chapters of this book. You see, Nehemiah knew his history. One of the things that you see from the very beginning of the book is that Nehemiah understands who's responsible for the fact that they're in exile. Why? Because he knew his history. He knew God's interaction with the nation of Israel before they'd come to this point. He knew that the nation of Israel was responsible. He knew the history. When you look at how he shares the dream and how careful he is with sharing the dream, I think that he'd learned from those who'd come before him. When you look at the story of Joseph and Jacob, those who weren't wise in how they shared the dream that God had given them, I think you see someone who understands his history. And because he understands the history, I think in this moment, rather than him looking at it and saying, okay, this must not be from God because look at all the things that are going wrong, or God must be closing the door because of look at all the things that are going wrong, rather than him even hesitating to move forward, he actually calls the people together. And just as he did at the end of chapter 3, he says, here's the deal, guys. I know that we're up against this, but we serve a God who is greater than what we're up against. And so now's our time to fight for what God's asked us to do. And he doesn't even hesitate. Why? Because when you look back at the history of the nation of Israel, as I believe Nehemiah understood and knew, he was able to see over and over and over again exactly what we're able to see if we're honest with ourselves about those who've come before us. And that is this: when God leads you into something great, there will always be a battle. And when you look back at the history of the nation of Israel, every time God does something great, every time God is going to take them to that next place, to that next level, there is always a battle. I don't think Nehemiah was surprised. I think he expected it. I think he knew that if you're going to dream with God, there will be a chapter 4. Don't be surprised by it. We talked about it a little bit last week. There are always those who benefit from the brokenness. There are always those who are afraid of change. And as Nehemiah begins to engage this battle, rather than him saying, oh, you know what, this is it, it's time to walk away, he doesn't hesitate. He instead calls the people together, and he calls them. He says, I want you to remember who our God is. Listen to this passage. I love this passage. chapter 4, verse 14, it says, don't be afraid of the enemy. Remember the Lord who is great and glorious, and fight for your brothers, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your homes. Fight. I think Nehemiah knew from the moment that the journey began, if I'm going to dream with God, there's going to be a battle. And I think it's important for us to realize, to understand that if we're going to be part of this restoration journey with God, if we're going to move into the lives of those around us and truly dream with God of how we can be part of restoring them, you have to understand there will be a chapter 4. And I know for many of us, when we hear that, we think to ourselves, then I'm out. It's really easy to get excited about a dream, and the dream's going to become a reality. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be amazing, and we get all excited. But then you hear the battle, and I think for a lot of us, and again, because of the fact that we don't understand the world around us and the way that God works, we hear that, and it's so negative. We're like, I don't want anything to do with that. I don't want anything to do with stress and conflict. I don't want anything to do with a battle. Because in our mind, it's entirely negative, again, because I'm not sure that we really understand who God is and how God works. See, we look at the battle as a negative. But when you look back through our history, and you look at those who've come before us, great men and women of faith, there are two things that you see over and over again. One is that there was always a battle, and two, that it's in the midst of those battles that their faith is actually forged. And I think for many of us, we want what God talks about in our lives. We want character. We want integrity. We want to be strong, and we want to be able to not just talk about loving well, but we want to really love people well. We want to be good co-workers. We want to move through life in such a way that the people around us are better for it. We want these things, but I wonder if because of the fact that we continue to shy away from the battle, if we're not missing out on the very things that helps us get there. I don't think Nehemiah looked at the battle as something that was negative. I think Nehemiah looked at the battle as a part of the process. And when you look at it, one of the things that's so important for you to understand if you're going to begin dreaming is that your dream is not just about what's going to happen in the people that you're looking to impact. It's also about what God's doing in you. And one of the most beautiful things about the God that we serve is that he has this unbelievable ability to be able to impact everyone involved in the equation. And one of the things that he wants to do in you as you walk this journey, it's not just for you to be able to impact them, but he wants to develop in you character. He wants to develop in you what it means to actually be like his son, what it means to actually look at the world and interact with the world like Jesus Christ. And because of that, I believe he leads us into the battle, because in the battle, our faith is forged. It develops in us this thing that the scriptures champion all the time, this thing called endurance, the ability to be able to push through, the ability to be able to hang on to hope, even when it looks like hope is lost, because the world needs someone who's able to demonstrate that. Those things aren't developed as you walk through open doors. Those things are developed as you learn to trust God to run into closed ones over and over again until they finally fall. And for some of you, you're dreaming, and I'm excited for you. I'm excited for you, but I'm telling you, there's coming a chapter 4 where you're going to have to fight. And I know when you first hear it, it's a negative, but not if you see it the way that God sees it, because it's in the midst of that that God wants to shape you as well. I was talking to someone who's in the middle of this dreaming process, and they had encountered an obstacle, and they're trying to figure out, how do I get around this? And they actually had this conversation with me of, you know, what is God doing, and why isn't God providing? And I thought that God was behind this, and now it doesn't look like it's coming together, and I'm having all this conflict, and it's becoming really, really difficult. And I said to them, I said, here's the thing. If God's just interested in the people that you're going to impact with this dream, then he'll probably take this away. But if he's also interested in building your faith in the process, then he probably won't. And you know what I've found? He cares too much about you to not develop you in the process as well. See, for him, it's not just about them. It's also about you. For God, it wasn't just about the walls being rebuilt. It was about what he wanted to build in Nehemiah. What he wanted to do to his faith, to his resolve. And so he calls him into, not away from, but into, as he calls so many others who've come before us, into the battle. Fight. And this isn't just demonstrated. This isn't just demonstrated with the story of Nehemiah. I don't know if you guys have realized this as we're walking through this, but everything that we've been talking about is perfectly displayed in the life of Christ. When you look at the life of Christ and you look at how God has been developing this dream of how he's going to bring you back to him. You see, from even before the moment that we stepped out of this relationship with him, even from before the moment when we said to him, you know what, I think you're holding out on me, I'm going to trust myself rather than trusting you. From even before that moment in the story, God had a dream of a family that had a father that loved the way a father should love, a family that related to one another and loved each other the way a family should. But it wasn't just a dream. This dream had a plan, a carefully crafted plan, exactly what we've been talking about. And one of the amazing things about God, we talked about it a couple weeks ago, how Nehemiah doesn't just share the plan immediately, but that he's carefully and strategically figuring out, okay, when do I want to share what? And you look back through the scriptures and you see God doing exactly the same thing. And so along the way, he's sharing little pieces of what this plan looks like, and he's filling us in a little bit more of what this mystery looks like and how this is going to work and how he's going to bring you back. And Jesus comes on the scene. He begins to do this as well. You see him interacting with the authorities, and everything that we've been talking about is literally demonstrated with Christ, leading all the way up to the battle. And if there's anything that shows us that there will be a chapter 4, I believe it's Christ's life. And God didn't call Christ out of the battle. He sent him in. And he said, "You go fight for them. You go fight for them. And you bring them back to us." You see, God didn't avoid the battle. He didn't see it as a mistake in the plan. He knew it was part of the process of restoration. the process requires a battle. And so Jesus went to that cross and his body was shredded for you so that you could be made whole. His blood was drained so that you could be washed clean. To battle for you. His disciples didn't understand this. They had the same mentality that so many of us have. And so when Jesus is sharing with them the fact that he's going to have to engage in this battle, they don't get it. And he's just shared with them in the passage that I want to share with you the reality that he's going to have to die. That in the battle, it's actually going to look like they've won. And he's trying to share with them that he's going to die and he's going to come back. But the disciples, they make us feel good about being ignorant. And they don't get it. They don't get it. He's trying to help them understand it. Listen to this exchange between Peter, our favorite disciple, and Jesus in Matthew chapter 16. It says, "But Peter took him aside and began to reprimand him for saying such things." This is the great thing about Peter. He always knows a little bit better than God. It says, "But Peter took him aside and began to reprimand him for saying such things. 'Heaven forbid, Lord,' he said, 'this will never happen to you.'" So I hear you talking about this, but this isn't the way it works. No. This isn't the way the restoration works. The way that the restoration works is that the Messiah comes and then all the doors open up and everything's a green light and everything falls into place and then you take the kingdom and then we kill all the Romans and then we're able to rule over the world. He says, that's the way it works. Not this conflict and battle and losing. He says, no. It doesn't work like that. And I know it's really easy for us to look at this situation and say, Peter, come on, Peter. Like, how can you? I've said that to Christ before. God's like, I want you to step into this battle. No, God, it's not really supposed to work that way. So how about you just take care of this, and I'll keep going. I bet you've said the same. And when you get to that point where there's the battle, you're going to be tempted to do the very same thing that Peter does with Jesus. God, this isn't the way it's supposed to work. Listen to what Jesus says back. It says, Jesus turned to Peter and said, "Get away from me, Satan. You are a dangerous trap to me. You are seeing things merely from a human point of view, not God's." He says, no. You're seeing the battle as a bad thing. But God doesn't. God sees the battle as the very opportunity for him to do more in your life than anything you've dreamed of. And so Jesus willingly steps into the battle. If you're going to dream with God, there will be a battle. But it is not something you have to be afraid of. Remember the words of Nehemiah. He comes to the people, he says, you don't have to be afraid. Remember our great and glorious God. There will be a battle, but here's the thing. The one that you fight with is bigger than anything that you will battle. The one that you fight with is bigger. We are not of those who shrink back and are destroyed, but of those who lean forward into the future in faith those who lean forward into the battle, those who fight for those around us the way that we were fought for. You see, he fought for us that we would be reborn. But you're not just reborn to be reborn, you're reborn to rebuild. You are reborn to rebuild. To move into the lives of those around you and to fight for them the way that Christ fought for you. We are of those who lean forward in faith, who see what is not yet and fight for it to become a reality. And fight for it to become a reality. You do not need to be afraid. Fight. Fight for your coworkers. Fight for your neighbor. Fight for your family. Fight. We are those who lean forward. And in the battle, not only are we able to demonstrate to the world around us who Christ is, but we experience what it means to become like him. We are those who fight for people. Will you pray with me? Father, there's something inside of us that just wants to run from the battle. We just want to run. We're afraid. Father, I pray that you would help us to be able to see, not merely from a human perspective, but to be able to see what you see. To be able to see that the battle is not just about what's going to happen in the lives of those that we fight for, but in the battle is where we realize the beauty of how you've loved us, where we realize the beauty of what it means to love like you. It's there in the battle that we become like you. Father, I pray that you'd continue to challenge us. Father, we do not want to be of those who shrink back and are destroyed, but of those who lean forward in faith, who lean into the future, who dream with you of what's possible, and are used by you for that to become a reality in the lives of those you love. In Jesus' name, amen.